we have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another post-match edition of a Purely Arsenal podcast. I've got Neil Shah with me. How you doing, Neil?
I'm all good, son. How you doing?
Good, good, good. I'm your host, Jack Sessions. I've got a couple of people message me saying, why don't you introduce yourself? I said, oh, yeah, all right. I also got
Don't know about who he is.
Shut up. Also got Michael Harris with another classic. I'm trying to remember the year on that shirt, Mike. Tell me.
Was it 94? I think it was the one that we kept on losing in. So I don't know why I'm wearing it, but I've got Bergkamp at the way, so that's the only reason I'm wearing it, because it's got Bergkamp.
Classic. Yeah. Like that. 94, 95, maybe. Yeah, Burke. It must be when he just arrived then. That's that season, wasn't it? 94, 95.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Under Rioch. Well, let's get into it. We're going to review the Man City Arsenal game, touch a little bit on the preparation for the Europa League. Also, imminently being announced is our Premier League squad, which we're all very, very excited about for differing reasons. Get into that a little bit, and then we'll talk a little bit about how mad the Premier League season is for a couple of minutes and have a little bit of a laugh about that. It's always nice to laugh at others when your team has a bad weekend, and we definitely had the opportunity to do that a little bit this weekend, which was quite nice. Lineup questions go to Mike. Mike, what was your thoughts on the lineup initially? What did you like and what didn't you like? And then also touch on maybe the surprise of the initial dropping of Luis. I know he played, but the initial dropping of Luis, I was a little bit surprised about. But what were your thoughts overall?
Yeah, I thought it was odd, an odd line. You know, I say odd, but when you looked at the lineup, I think we were all discussing and trying to say, oh, what is it? Is it 4-3-3? Is it going 4-3-3? Is it three at the back? And then we were basically like, well, we don't know what it is, and hopefully City will be the same. Didn't know, obviously, City were going to do something similar. In terms of the way they set up as well. But when you looked at the lineup, you thought, okay, Willian is going to play on one side and Pepe the other side and maybe Aubameyang in the middle. And yeah, the false nine thing with Willian being the one in the middle, that was a strange one. Because I think Arteta, you know, jumping to the end of the game, Arteta said, you know, he's been at City for 4 years and he's seen a lot of teams come here and do, you know, really hard, you know, really some good work to cause him some problems. But I was looking back on some of the stats, and of all the games that City lost whilst Pep and Arteta were together, none of them had a false nine. They all had a natural forward in that position, and then everyone else around them did whatever work they did. There was never a situation where, when City lost those games, where they had to deal with that situation of having a false nine. So what I think Arteta really did, in a sense, he overthought it. He overthunked the game too much, knowing, you know, it was quite recent to the last game we played City. And I think the same thing, to a certain extent, happened with Liverpool. We played them recently. You know, they had some wounds to lick, and they were looking at an opportunity to get back at us. And I think maybe that's what he was almost like thinking, well, I have to do something different. I can't go in the same way again because we might get embarrassed. But for me, the players, the personnel was okay, but just the way it worked out with Willian being this false nine, it, you know, why do it in that situation, in that game, in that situation? It was a bit of a surprise for me. That's why I thought it was a bit odd.
Yeah, the natural thing, I mean, when we all talked about the lineup non-stop for the first hour before the game started, and the natural thing in your head when you see it is, what I was talk about positives, I'm really encouraged that he actually appeared like he was playing a back four. And actually, even when I watched it, even though we were very passive, it looked like a back four to me, large part. Saka pushing on in that left midfield role. But what you wanted to see with that lineup was Saka on the left, which I know a lot of his good work came down the left, but moving Aubameyang central and dropping with Willian into that sort of midfield space to make it into a free, possibly, and that attacking midfield role, which we said he might be quite effective from. And we saw him in the latter stages against Sheffield United look a little bit more effective from when he could get on the ball. I'm just trying to work out, Neil, and obviously we are going to criticise Arteta a little bit at times. You know, we've all huge fans of Arteta and love what he's done with us in terms of getting us more organised. And you could see how City were far, far more worried about us than they probably ever have been going there, you know, in some seasons. And no doubt I can see that by the way they adapted. They played a back three, which they never do. They clearly, after they got their goal, they sat far more and didn't look to push on. Right, there was a lot of differences that we saw here, which is, with respect against us, is nice to see in a way. But Neil, I was just trying to work out, what is the intention of, if you're going to play the false nine, why aren't you playing the player that scored 3 in 3? Okay, missed the sitter against Liverpool to equalise and clearly suffering from that now in terms of not being in the team. But in a team that lacks so much in creating chances and converting them, I just find it really difficult to understand, if you're going to play that way with a false nine, play your false nine that's been effective and gone on and won the cup for you in a front three. This isn't a game for me. It wasn't a game to try something out that, you know, new. And I don't think Willian's ever played in that position before in his career. I'm not sure, but I put money on it that he hasn't. So I feel for Willian a little bit, but he just looked like a rabbit caught in the headlights a little bit. Lost. And it's not really his fault. We have to put a little bit of the blame there on Arteta. Pleasure, good on him for trying something, but what's his intention, Neil? I don't know what his intention there is, really.
It's too much respect, I think. He showed too much respect. I don't know why, because he, out of probably everyone, manager in the Premiership, knows Pep better than anyone else. We've had a good result against them recently, and I was quite perplexed with how we set up. Tierney was also an odd one for me, because we talked about how he'd been in isolation, and all of a sudden he's popping up and playing. And I don't know whether that was the right thing to do. I don't know. I mean, I think maybe that wasn't with hindsight, looking back on it. He did play a couple of good parts of the game, but I just don't think that may have been the right decision. But talking about Willian, and maybe I couldn't understand it. I just did not understand why he was playing in that position at all. For me, I would prefer to stick with what he discovered with Aubameyang and play him more central. And I think there was times when there was a bit of an interchange during the game, and he did shift into the middle, and he was straight away. There was more of an immediate impact with him being there. I don't understand, like you said, the lack of people or personnel, if you are going to go down that route, and why you choose to omit them. I don't understand that either. I just think, for me, it was like watching a game of chess, and even from Man City as well, which is good, because that has shown all of us that now the bigger teams, especially someone like City, are respecting us a little bit more, and they're not going out full whack, because they know that we can hurt them, and we have done recently. So I think that's a positive for sure. But it just looks so... we were so introverted. There was no creativity. There was no imagination. We didn't spread the ball enough. All our attacks, which when they did come, for me, I mean, I might be wrong, but most of them came on the left-hand side. We didn't utilise the right as much. We didn't spread the play. There was none of that imagination. And I think it was just too introverted. I think we were too... He was just showed them far too much respect. And I would have preferred a game plan where we were a little bit more on the front foot. We saw a little bit of it when Luis had one went through the middle. And I think that led to Aubameyang's chance, if I remember correctly. And I think I wanted to see a little bit more of that. I think Tierney did it a little bit when he set up that magnificent 1-2 for Saka. We should have done a little bit more of that. Yes, we could still be being defensive, but we just didn't do anything going up front. It was two halves. We had one half. Now, I know you guys might go into the defensive side of the game and be a little bit more critical, but I thought, apart from the goal, I don't think we did too badly. I thought they played very well. Off the ball, we were good. We were well set. We were stopping City from doing anything. I mean, they had such a high press. They were stopping us from playing from the back from the start anyway. But we slowly throughout the game managed to, you know, worm our way out of that and create a couple of chances. But defensively, I didn't really have any problems apart from the goal. And that's just one incident. It's just the forward thinking was all wrong. And Willian, I agree. I don't blame him. He was in a position where I don't think he's ever played before. Didn't know what to do. Should have played Aubameyang in the middle for me all day long. And I think Partey, I don't agree he should have started, because maybe it's too early, two training sessions in, too early, but he should have come on a lot earlier then. I think, a lot earlier.
Yeah, and the issue there, Neil, is not that he came on, well, it is that he came on late, but is that nothing from 45 minutes onwards, there was no evidence that we were creating anything or going to be doing anything and going there. Almost like both teams had kind of settled for the result in a way. I'm sure we hadn't, but there was no, other than Pepe's header in the first minute of the second half, and I think a free kick from Luis that ballooned over. Well, we created absolutely nothing and looked like creating absolutely nothing. It was just a dead game. And that's really frustrating that he didn't change it earlier. I mean, we're going back and forth, but it was frustrating that he didn't change it earlier.
Yeah, no, I just had there was an interesting exchange I had with someone on Twitter, and he said, I can't remember if I can remember his name, I'll give him a shout out. But he said it was almost just like we were playing a two-legged tie in a cup, and Arteta was pleased with that 1-0 loss and then take that back home. And because there was just no evidence of us trying to attack them or give them anything going forward. And I totally agree with you. And
this is where the frustration, because you'll get the fans and you see it on Twitter and social media, you know, the ones that will come out with the positive stats about this game and say, look how much we've improved, look how many chances we're limiting them to in comparison. But I think you also have to look at the onus was on, once they scored, the onus is on the other team, no matter who that team is, to take the game to that team. There is no absolute reason that City need to go and get three or four, especially after just conceding five at home the previous game when they went 1-0 up, I believe. So they knew in the back of their heads that we are a threat like Leicester, and they don't need to push it. They've had a bad start to the season for City standards. That they can just sit off and hold and say to us, what can you do to break us down? And that's the really frustrating thing, is that Arteta talks about adaptation and adjustment and, you know, adapting to the moments in the game. And other than the 15 minutes after the goal, which is largely through a 19-year-old that is playing out of his skin, and that is the only one willing to take risks with the ball. I mean, you've probably got another player on the other side, but we don't seem to want to give the ball to him. So he's the only one that's driving us forward. And that's what's, it shouldn't be on that 19-year-old. When Fabregas was doing this, you had all these other players around him that were doing it. We should not be talking about Bukayo Saka being the man that is leading this team and driving us forward. It's great that he is, but there has to be more onus. I just feel like we've got players that are too safe, that don't want to drive forward, don't want to take risks and want to create this perfect goal. I mean, I mentioned the two stats to you, and I'm trying to read into the stats. I don't like stats, but we're 17th in the league for shots. Now, defensively, obviously, we're second in terms of our defensive record, so that's great. But we're 17th in terms of shots created. Our big chances created are quite good. But what that tells me is we almost want to do things perfectly, but we don't create volume. Sometimes we'll go forward, but we want to create the perfect goal, so we'll go back and try to create that intricate passing. And it almost has to be perfect from back to front to create this move. And you only get one or two of those in a game, especially against a team like City. And there's no volume there. And when you've got your best player in Aubameyang, who has the least touches on the pitch with 25, again, same against Liverpool, least touches on the pitch with like about the same, you're not utilising your best players correctly at all. But Mike, I mean, just going to you, I mean, the frustration from my perspective, and there are some positives to take away from this game, is we've had no wins in the last 29 away games against a big team. So although that's not all down to Arteta, you know, you see teams go to these big teams that are far smaller than us and get results. And the frustration for a lot of fans lies there, I think. But also the passiveness that we start these games with is frustrating. But is it just a teething process, Mike? Is it the fact that we've been playing in a way for the last end of last season that is so really focused on being a counter-attacking transitional team that we now have to adapt to try and to be imaginative and dominate games, and there is going to be a process to that? Is that what you're thinking? Or
yes, I think, you know, the stats, you know, never lie. You know, obviously that is that's the problem now, you know, getting the shots up, getting the chance creation up. Defensively, yes, it looks like you think Arteta is still dealing with, you know, apart from Gabriel, and to a certain extent Tierney, he's dealing with players that he inherited from before, who were chucking in goals left, right and centre, and you know, touching on what Neil said about our defensive record, touch wood, but everyone else in the league this season have had a complete collapse, or have had, you know, conceded loads of goals, you know Chelsea at the weekend, the other lot against West Ham. you know, Man United, even Man City, you know, Liverpool, all of them have had shockers defensively. Yes, we conceded three against Liverpool, but it wasn't like they were like in the past where it was like, oh, we've conceded three goals in 5 minutes or something like that. It's been off the back of us trying to get back into the game and not being quite good enough. Oh, and then we just lose our concentration. So in that instance, what he's done defensively, is sorting us out in the structure, is fantastic. You know, you've got to tip your hat to him. But now, even Wenger said a couple of days ago, what he's doing is fantastic defensively, but he now has to let go. He literally said he has to let go and sort the last third out. He's got to sort this out. And I think it's all going to come into play when Partey gets involved, because he will allow us to have a little bit more domination there, a little bit more presence in the midfield. And because he can interchange and he can do stuff at the front, or he can do stuff, you know, in front of the defence that allows maybe the other two to go a little bit further forward. Or if he goes further forward, it allows the other two to be a bit more secure and for him to disrupt and cause a lot of damage. So I think it's coming. I definitely think that change is going to come, where we're going to still be that sort of solidity at the back. But yeah, the chance creation. And like you said, it's almost like what we're doing at the moment. It's like football by the numbers, you know, get it down here again, bring it around the back, you know, play it across again. And, you know, The two centre backs are on the byline basically to get the ball, you know, against Man City. I've never seen anything like it. They were literally right on the byline getting the ball, either side of Leno, to try and get out again. And yeah, we're not going to play teams at that level every week, and we've got two of them out of the way. But yeah, there's got to be, you know, we've got to be a plan B. There's got to be a way to sort of get out a little bit more, you know, play some of those vertical passes, get up the pitch a bit quicker than what we are at the moment. And again, I think once Partey gets involved and gets settled, I think he's going to be the one to instigate all that. And that maybe might allow someone like Danny Ceballos to get a little bit more forward and do some damage, because, you know, he played well. He did a lot of defensive work and he intercepted a lot of stuff. And yep. You know,
made most interceptions, made most tackles.
It looked like the first 20 minutes, he looked like he was running in treacle a little bit, but then he just switches and then he just bang, and then he was just pulling strings again. So yeah, it's all going to come for Partey. But again, you know, we're putting that pressure on him, but I think he's got the, you know, he's big enough to take that on board. But when you've got, like you said, you've got your best man, you've got your best striker getting 25 touches a game, you know, it's not good enough, is it? You know, and there was another stat, I don't know if you saw the stat floating around on Twitter about the big chances that he's had compared to Robert Lewandowski. Like, Robert Lewandowski has had like 60 big chances last season for Bayern. I know we're comparing different teams and different levels, but he had 60 big chances. He scored 30 goals. Aubameyang had 27 big chances last season. 27. And he scored 17 goals, like league goals. So it just shows you the difference. He's not getting enough chances. He's feeding off scraps, basically. Yeah. So that needs to change.
Yeah, it massively needs to change. And what's, what I find odd is that I think our front three is probably the strongest part of our team. And what was working for Arteta going forward last season, even towards the latter end, was he started to get a tune out of Pepe, Laka and Aubameyang as a three. And he's moved away from that. You know, he's moved away from that from game one with Willian on the right. And I don't want to knock Willian too much, but I never really watched him enough at Chelsea. And it's early days for him, obviously. Not judging him, but he looks leggier than I thought, to be honest. He looks like he... I always felt he was a player with full of energy, full of, you know, could do the two-way game a lot. But I'm not seeing that from him. And we're using him in so many different areas. But I found it odd to a player that needs confidence and just started to come out of his shell a little bit in Pepe, and you basically say to him, you're a bench player from the start of this season. I found that very strange. And then with Lacazette, we know Lacazette is a fitness and a confidence player too, and if you're not starting him after he scored 3-3, you start to wonder you know, when are you going to consecutively start that kind of player, to be honest? So hindsight's a wonderful thing. You know, before the game, it could have worked and we could have said it's a masterclass, but it really didn't look like it was working. And I was frustrated he didn't change it earlier. But other than the 15 minutes in the second, start of the first half, end of the first half, I didn't really see it. But let's do incidents in the game. Neil, where do you lie the blame for or I think multiple areas probably, but for their goal? Where did you see the area? You said it was a pretty good defensive performance, but we could have probably done better for their goal in a couple of areas, couldn't we?
Yeah, I think the pass from, who was it from? Was it Mahrez to Aguero? Was it Mahrez to Aguero?
I think it might have been. It was from outright.
That was one class pass. I mean, I don't know what you can do against that, but I think Dani Ceballos' position, I might be wrong because I haven't watched it again. The standout thing for me was Bellerin's position and how he tackled the threat. We can all kind of lay blame or maybe try and lay part of the blame to Leno and his inability maybe to parry away. But I'm not quite sure if he could have done much about that one. I don't know. I mean, we've got to get away from this stigma of comparing him to Martinez. It's gone. We can't do that anymore. It's finished. We have to concentrate on Leno and what he can do for the fortunes of our club. So we're stuck with Leno. I'm not so sure whether he could have done better. I'm not so sure whether he could have parried it away or whether that was the only option. My only issue was the way Bellerin was positioned. And that, for me, was probably one of the only... I mean, there were some other errors which could have cost us, but that, for me, is the one that stuck out. And unfortunately, that's the one that led to the goal. Because I've not seen it again, I can't recall. There was potentially, I think it might have been Ceballos earlier, where his position, he could have closed down a bit better, but might know a little bit more about it than I do. But for me, Bellerin was a standout error in that goal.
Yeah, I mean, it's just second half he did it a couple of times. I know Sterling's a great player, but you know it was like he was sliding all over the place, better and like couldn't keep his feet. But that's kind of basics of defending. I was never a defender, but you don't show him inside. You do not show him inside. And Bellerin's twisting and turning. He's never set himself. And I thought defensively, Bellerin was quite poor in this game at times. To be honest, I felt a lot of their play came from his side, and I thought in terms of his ability in the one-on-one duels, I didn't think he was very good when it really mattered, and that was my biggest frustration and first seeing of it. It was a bit like the Pulisic one with Chelsea in the cup final, though. It's just evidence of our lack of recovery speed if we're not in the perfect position in midfield. Xhaka's pushed up, Ceballos, he's just pushed up a little bit, but they're never getting back. Aguero's not particularly fast. But if you've got Fabinho there, you've got Partey there, you're probably putting pressure straight back on him and he's back in the defensive third trying to recover. Do you know what I mean? But then we've just got one overloads and Luis has to step to the ball and things like that. I think Leno maybe could have done a little bit better and try to parry it wide, not straight back out. It wasn't a great shot from Foden with his weaker foot. But again, yeah, like you said, I don't want to go into the goalkeeper stuff because I keep watching that bloke up in the Midlands, and it's given me some frustration. So I don't want to go down that old toxic route.
Is it true he's only conceded two, and those were to Liverpool?
Yeah,
that's it.
It's very true. It's very
wow.
True.
Oh my god.
And he's making some good saves, but they look like a much better side as well. They look like a really good side this season.
How amazing is it? A goalkeeper can change fortune. They survived by 1 point last season. And look at them now.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah, and they got little Barkley in the midfield who's starting to play again. It's crazy, really. They got a great result on a weekend against Leicester, at Leicester as well. But so I think, their goal, like you said, but other than that, let's talk of positives, Mike. Again, the players we keep talking about this season, I thought Gabriel and Saka were two of the real positives to take from this game. What did you feel? I mean, it is good and positive that he's going back to a back four. And I don't think he does that without Gabriel, because I don't think we have a back four centre back other than Gabriel in my head, really, that's fit at the moment or in the squad. You know, we don't know enough about Saliba. But what's your thought? I mean, we've had enough time to sort of evaluate Gabriel. And obviously, we've evaluated other defenders at this point, too, where Mustafi had a good start and stuff like that. But he really does look very, very mature for his age, you know, 22, 23, Gabriel. And you can see why we made that signing. I mean, he looked great again, didn't he, really?
Yeah, he did. There's a bit in the first half when I think Aguero had the ball out wide and he kind of went to ground, but he still managed to stay with him and block the ball for a corner. And just things like that, you know, it's just got like his different mentality, different skill set, a way of defending than what we've been used to for the last couple of seasons. But he was good again. Obviously, fortunate, with the penalty. Obviously, we'll touch on it. But
you felt it was a pen, right? You felt it was a pen.
Oh yeah. It was a penalty. You know, I think one of the actual commentators actually said, if that's down on the halfway line or whatever, it's a free kick straight away. You know, so what's the difference? Oh, it's got an Arsenal shirt on. So
doesn't get reviewed again.
That's ridiculous. It's like the referee just wanted to get off the pitch, you know, wanted to get in for his half-time cup of tea and his suit, and get the suitcase from a man wearing shades or something, you know, all dodgy and stuff. But, it was ridiculous. It was definitely, that was a definite penalty. And the thing is, again, we'll see something like that next weekend in another game, and that will get given, won't it? You know, delighted with Gabriel, with how he's settled. And, you know, even the first game when he was thrown in against Fulham, we did expect him to start. He did, and, you know, he scored. He hasn't looked back, and had a couple of ropey moments, obviously, whilst he's been playing. And obviously, he had another one when he sort of blocked off Bernardo Silva as well. And that, you know, again, on another day, who knows, that might have been given us something. But no, delighted with him. And, yeah, Saka, what can you say about him? You know, he's the only spark at the moment in that last third. The only one who's got he hasn't got the fear to sort. You know, he just goes and drives and tries to make things happen. And from right now, you can't have him out of the team now. You know, I know Arteta likes to maybe take one or two out, but you put Saka in all the time. You know, he's the one at the moment up there.
And it's just really about where you play him. But the great thing about those two players is it doesn't really matter where you play him along their line. Gabriel, keep it 3 or 2, central, left side. You know, he just plays consistently. And top clubs, you know, you need your top players to play consistently. And that's what we're not getting from all over the pitch, really, at the moment. And we're just so left side dominant, but not like we were when we had Ashley Cole and Henri and Pires, where we were just so good down the left side. It's more numerically. It's just like we're throwing everyone down the left side. Arteta only wants to attack down the left side. And usually that opened up. Do you remember it used to open up so much space for Lundberg? And, you know, and Lundberg was always one of our top goal scorers from midfield. And you hope that opens up space for Pepe. But again, Pepe really strikes me as a guy that just needs to be on the ball all the time. And the more he's on the ball, the better he looks throughout the game. The more given the ball, just keeps getting touches on the ball, looks better and better. And the more you isolate him, the harder it is for him to feel his way into the game, and he'll lose the ball cheaply and he'll just go missing. And I don't know where to place the blame. We have to get the best out of Pepe. And I don't think we've handled him that great this season, to be honest, in terms of him in and out of the team and the way we structure our attacking setup. And we have to filter him. And maybe it is, like you said, Mike, make it getting Partey in and being able to distribute that ball. And he's more of a right-sided central midfielder, possibly.
But the thing that was frustrating about Pepe the other day was that it looked like it was just him and Ake just having their own game. He wasn't doubled up on like Aubameyang was. Aubameyang basically had Walker and forgot the name of the other guy, but Cancelo, basically he had two right backs basically there covering him. So obviously Guardiola saw what he did, the damage he did in the semi-final, and thought, okay. But on the other side, because it was flooded on that side and they had an extra guy over there, the only person that was close to Ake would have been Foden, and to a certain extent Bernardo Silva, because he was floating everywhere. So really, if they had switched it a lot more over to Pepe, you could have had a chance for him to at least stretch his legs or open it out. But then when it did go out to him, he just showed again a lack of conviction. He just was getting easily brushed off the ball. You know, just... I've never seen a guy with such lack of conviction as a professional. Like, he just doesn't look like he's got the killer instinct, so to speak. You know, he goes on that pitch thinking, I'm going to, you know, be a match winner today. And you just wish he had that, because Ake's a good player. He's a good defender, don't get me wrong. But you're telling me if he'd have got the ball around at him a couple of times, he wouldn't have beaten him once or twice. And that would have been a difference. That could have made a difference.
Sometimes he just tries to do too much with the ball. Just simplify it. Do what Robin used to do. Cut inside and flip him, whip it in. Do you know what I mean? Like, cut inside, whip it in. Stop trying to do 2-3 step overs before you do it. But I agree. He should have done more against Ake, because I think Ake's a good defender, but he should have had him, really. So when he does get the ball, you're right, he's got to do more with it. But it's frustrating. He had two headers as well, which a lot of people look at that and they go, well, Pepe's, you know, he's not good in the air. So, but one of those headers, I think the first one, should have done a lot better with it, went wide. The second one was a little bit far out, got on target, okay. But the first one, I think he should have done a lot better with it. It was a free header, no one was near him. Should have done a lot better. But our best chances, Neil, were through Saka. I think one of them was given offside, but maybe. And Aubameyang had a great chance as well, which wasn't offside, but it was given offside. I think that was the one I'm thinking of.
Look at that one.
And it's not, you know, he needs to be getting 3 or 4 of those a game. So I'm not going to say I was bad miss, but really one of the Saka ones or Aubameyang, you do expect to put away, Neil, don't you? And that changes. And a lot of people say if you drew 1-1, you'd be having a completely different. You'd say it was a fantastic performance. And my response is, but we didn't. Do you know what I mean? We didn't draw 1-1. So we look at the game and we say, I think we needed to do, in the last 45 minutes, I think we need to do a lot more to take the game to Man City. We need to be going there and saying, I'd rather lose 2 or 3-0 here and you risk that and grab a point. I personally am still in that boat. I remember going to City years ago with Wenger, we lost 6-3. We're always in the game until the last few minutes. We're always still in the game. We're going, we might get 2 here and they might not get 1. And we've got to attack with more volume. And my concern is chance creation is not something that you just click your fingers and start doing. It's something that builds over time in terms of style and stuff like that. But all of those good chances, from what I remember, came through either Saka or Tierney's sort of progression, Neil.
Yeah, it was. There was the one with Tierney. That was the better of the two, I think, where he played then, eventually played a 1-2 with Aubameyang at the end of it. But Tierney's persistence and tenacity, and that's what Tierney should have done more of in the game. Well, all of the players, really. I mean, that was an example of us not being aggressive enough. As I said, you can still be defensive, but when you get those one couple of moments or chances in a game against playing a team like City, in a game with such high stakes, you're not going to get many chances. So the 2 or 3 or 4 that you might create, make the most of them. You can only have a go and at least try and get them on target. But Saka for me is outstanding. And I worry, like you alluded to earlier, that we're putting too much emphasis on this kid. He seems very grown up. He seems very mature. He seems like he's the kind of person that can handle it. But you just don't know if every game the expectation is risen. Do you remember when he had that slight drop off and even us on the pod kind of went, well, he's not playing as well. So it's only human nature that we get on top of him, but we shouldn't be, because we've got to then remember who he is. And he's a kid at the end of the day, he's a teenager. So I think the other players have to take his example and start doing a little bit more what he does. He created that chance with Tierney, and then he did that lovely 1-2 with the Bamming, and that was a good save by the keeper. I mean, I don't know what else he could have done. And then the other one, I'm trying to remember who he was partnering to create that chance. But he was one of the only ones that was running behind the defenders, you see. He was the only one that was doing that.
Yeah, I mean, he had...
What you were saying...
He had four dribbles. He had 4 dribbles, and no one else... Yeah. Had more than one other than Pepe who lost the ball both times. Yeah. But again, it's just not enough of that progression with the ball, is it?
No. And this is the worry. I mean, we can't... I am all for the defensive, fine-tuning, which Arteta had to do. Taking over from what Emery had left, which is probably our worst team for so many bloody years. The first thing Arteta had to do, because it's foundation work, is sort out the defence. But he's done that in my book. He's done such a good job with what he's got, with what he had. Yeah, now we've got a couple of signings. But before that, he had to make do with what he had. And he still did a good job, in my opinion. We've got to just be a bit more kind of, I don't know, courageous, maybe. I found, and please don't take this the wrong way, anyone watching and you two as well, but I found it a little bit Emery-esque, that game. I just thought it was a lot, I wouldn't say cowardly, but overcautious. And we can't do that against City. We've got to, or teams like City, we have to take them by the sword, because I don't think there was a better time to play City, not for a long time, because I think they're vulnerable at the moment. I don't think they're the full article. So we missed a chance there, as far as I'm concerned. But Saka, oh my God, he's amazing. And I worry, Jack, I worry that he's going to have too much on him. And we've got to take that little bit away and let the other players spread that responsibility.
Yeah, and it shouldn't like you said, you've got quality players in the squad, especially in the front third, and shouldn't be on him every game to be looking to him to create something out of nothing. It should be, you know, we should be far more in tune with each other at this point. And the use of Aubameyang is still, you know, especially this season, is concerning to me. A lot of people say it's progression, and I can understand that. We looked, like you said, but I think the players need to have more faith in each other to know that they can progress and push forward, and trust in the players that are behind them to win their individual battles. It's been so long since we've been able to trust centre-backs to win individual battles. But I think in Luis and Gabriel, Luis, obviously, pace is going to cost you with him, but generally, he's very good in a one-on-one. If it's not a pace thing, he's a good footballer. And Gabriel, I mean, I think you've got to start trusting in him. Leave him one-on-one with defenders at times.
He's a great player.
Yeah, he can handle it. He can handle it. Bomb on. Bomb on in numbers. That's what we need to do.
But seriously, guys, Michael, you alluded to it earlier. I think the introduction of Partey now is going to make a difference. Jack, I really believe that with him focusing on those defensive responsibilities, him protecting those back three or four, whatever formation we choose, will allow the creativity of someone like Ceballos, of someone like Saka, even Lacazette. Now, Lacazette came on and he was sitting so deep. I thought he was a central midfielder when he came on. He should have been up there trying to poach a goal. What was he doing right back there? But with Partey coming into the fray, I think that's going to be the link that we've so needed between that defence and the creative link-up play, that I think that now we can, maybe Arteta will be able to feel a bit more courageous, because he's got that added fuel in Partey. And I think I'm going to go for it here. I think he should start now, playing all the games. He's got to. I think he's fit enough. He looked like a beast when he came on. Seriously.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, your camera switched off. Maybe you switched. You're still there, but your camera switched off and you're muted. Oh, where'd you go? He's back. But no, I agree with you. I mean, he had 8 minutes. So I found that a little bit odd. I found his substitutions a little bit odd, Mike. What did you think of his substitutions? I found them a little odd. I never like it to see Eddie Nketiah out on the wing. He's a fox in the box wherever he wanted the word. It's like putting Franny Jeffers out on the wing. Very strange.
That was strange. And the timing of it as well, especially Partey. I think we saw him, he was getting warmed up at about 60 odd minutes, and you think, okay, he's going to come on 70 minutes, give him 20 minutes and let him, you know, like I think I WhatsApped to you guys, I said, you know, they don't want, you know, Partey coming on with 20 minutes to go, you know, dictating things or maybe making runs through and committing people, and he got 8 minutes. And so it's a bit of a strange one. And Ketia as well. Again, if you're going to play this false nine or playing Ketia or Lacazette there, they can do the job there. You know, they can do both sides. They can do the work. To do the doggies or whatever. Put one on. Let Lacazette do the doggies for 70 minutes, and then put Eddie on to do the next bit. Don't put. You know, that's what I think. I think he was trying to be a bit too clever. You know, sometimes when Guardiola has been accused of being too clever, too left field, where, you know, when they get in the Champions League and he did it, was it one game against Real Madrid? He didn't play Kevin De Bruyne. He left him on the bench or something like that. He left him and Sterling on the bench for a big game, and then he thought, okay. And he does things like that just to sort of throw the opposition, but it's almost like he's overthinking it. And I think, to a certain extent, Arteta did a little bit of that. You know, you don't be doing no false nine stuff in that situation. You don't need to do it. You know, if you're going to do it, try it against maybe at home against Sheffield United or something, but not against them. You know, you need to make sure everyone turns up and knows what they're doing. And like Neil touched on, Willian, he looked like he was lost. You know, there's times that, you know, there's stuff on Twitter that you can see there where he should have made some runs and opened things up for Pepe, and he didn't do it. He was just taking up space. So yeah, a bit surprised with Arteta. I think, you know, again, you know, not knocking him in terms of what he's done so far, but he's out there, you know, when he does drop the ball or make a, you know, thing that we're not sure about, then we're gonna mention it. We're not just gonna You know, be a cheerleaders and wave the flag, whatever, every game. You know, we all to a man think that, yeah, he maybe dropped the ball this time, and you know, and you know, but yeah. Hopefully he'll get through for thought, and the party will start, and then the party will start.
Yeah, exactly. It's not. I mean, people posting, look, we're five games in, 9 points. We're sitting fifth. You can't look at the table after five games. Like, you can't look at it. What you need to look at is, how are you playing? What's your performance like? Because that is the biggest indicator of where results are. And in fairness to us, as positive as we are, other than the Fulham game, all of our performances have been extremely underwhelming. I know we've had Liverpool and City away, but you know, West Ham and Sheffield United at home, we weren't sitting here comfortable, and we should have played a lot better in those games. Even if those teams are better than maybe a lot of people think this season, especially like the likes of West Ham, we've seen what they. But you know, we struggled a lot in those games for large periods, especially going forward and creating, and just find it very odd that we lack goals throughout the whole team. And if you lack goals throughout the whole team, then play your players that get goals. Do you know what I mean? Like, play your players that get goals. I, like you said, it's just overthinking it. If we're creating volumes and volumes of chances and it's just hitting the bar and hitting the post, and you're like, oh, it's coming, boys. But we're not. So when you get a chance, we've had 7 big chances this season. When you get a chance, you want them to fall to your guys that score 1 in 2. We've only got 2 of those players, and that's Lacazette and Aubameyang. Just keep playing them until we get to a point where we're creating more. Just keep playing it. It doesn't make any sense to me. And it makes no sense to me when your most prolific goal scorer this season. I just find it very odd that he's been dropped for 2 games based on a poor finish at Anfield, when what we should have been looking at is, wow, he got in the position, because no one else has been getting in the position. So do you know what I mean? It's very odd. I find that very strange. I don't want to go massively into the Aguero thing, but I do think we should touch on it. Puts his arm around the shoulder of a linesman. I think, by the way, it should be recognised that it was the correct decision by the linesman as well. So it was a throw-in, right? It wasn't a foul, a red card. Like, it was just, I think it was the correct decision. She handled it fantastically, very maturely, right? I could count the men referees that would handle that terribly, right? Your Mike Deans, etc. And is it a red card? Is it a red card, Neil? Do you think it is? I mean, do you remember Durkin's one on Petit? Do you remember against Villa years ago, where Durkin's running, Petit just puts his hands out to stop him, and Durkin goes, right, I've had enough of you, and sends him off? This is way worse than that. I mean, arm around the shoulder, pulling the shoulder a little bit. I mean, I don't want to overreact on it, but you can't. Ultimately, male or female, you shouldn't be hands on the referee for any reason.
By the letter of the law, that should have or could have had serious repercussions, if not on the pitch or after. I mean, I don't know if they're going to look at it after. I don't know whether they already have. I don't know, guys, if you know. But
Pat downplayed it, which is really bad as well. You should say that was wrong, but you shouldn't do that. And I downplayed it.
I was watching it, and I'll be honest with you, whether it's female or male, I found it really awkward. It was almost as like he'd asked her for a drink and said, do you fancy a drink at the bar? And she didn't want to know. And he was like trying to, it just felt weird to me. There was just something very wrong about it. And it only lasted 2 or 3 seconds. Now, I got pelters on Twitter saying you're making a big mountain out of a molehill. And maybe I was, but I was just going on the emotion of what I saw at that moment in time. And at that moment in time, it just felt really odd. But by the letter of the law, if it's male, female, or whatever, it's not allowed. And it should be at least a booking, if not a red card. But nothing. But yeah, I have to say, she handled it brilliantly. I was really impressed with her. Really well handled. And maybe it's a lesson for everyone to learn going forward. But I don't know what Aguero was thinking in that moment. Just don't know what he was thinking. Now, I always have to put this in because I'm biased. And I'm just thinking, if that had been an Arsenal player that did that, I wonder if it had been a different outcome. But you just don't know, do you?
No, exactly. But yeah, I agree with you on that one. I don't know if you got anything to add on it, but yeah, I think Neil's kind of summed it up.
Yeah, I think a yellow would have been at least a yellow. There was some pictures going around on Twitter. People saying, "Oh, you know, it wasn't all that bad," because they had a picture of Paul Pogba, I think, touching was it Anthony Taylor's or Lee Mason's head? You know, actually touching his head like that, and then someone tweeted, "Oh, you're allowed to touch your teammates." So, you know, it was a bit funny.
That's exactly
but,
it.
But yeah, it was out of order. It was out of order. And yeah, it was awkward the way he sort of pulled, he sort of sharply pulled her for literally for a split second, and then she pulled away again. Then yeah, he should have got us, at least, you know, he didn't even get a talking to. That's the thing, he didn't even get a talking to, but he should have probably got a yellow and told not to do that again. You know, you 1 minute you want to talk about having making the game more inclusive and getting more women in the game, getting people watching the women's football and the stuff that they're talking about today about getting more people to attend games and more representations, and then something like that happens and it's like, oh no, I'll brush under the carpet, you know, it's all right, don't, you know, it's nothing, you know. So
yeah,
you can't have it both ways.
No, exactly. Yeah, and if they book him, like you said, they book him, referee makes a point of it, this discussion probably doesn't need to happen, you know.
Yeah, of course.
A lot of people. Absolutely. Just you've got to make a stand on it. We've got a couple of questions. Carl Folley, I'll go to you for this one, Neil. Actually, I'll go to Michael, because you do not like formation questions. He's up wondering if we should play a 4-4-2 because we don't have a number 10. Oh, I mean, we do, but we don't. We won't go into it. But after today's game, this was after last week's game, he went wondering if it'd be better to move to a 4-4-2 because we have no centre attacking midfield role. What do you think on a 4-4-2, Mike? It's not something that top teams really play anymore, is it?
No, I wouldn't go with that. If I had a choice, I would play a 4-2-3-1. That would be my ideal formation. And then you're having Aubameyang in his position up front, and then in behind you can do what you want. You could have Saka there, you could have Willian there, Dani Ceballos there, or you can put Pepe in there. But then behind them you have Partey and Xhaka, and Xhaka, Partey's already said he thinks he can work really well with Xhaka. So you know, if he just had that there, I think that would be more of a, maybe that's the way he's going to go, who knows. Because then if you had Saka on the left of that three, you still have him possibly working with Tierney on the overlap possibly, and then he can slip back, you know, whilst he goes. So there's lots of options, but if I have a choice, it will be 4-2-3-1 rather than a 4-4-2. You know, those days, or 4-4-1-1, what it was with Bergkamp and Henry, you know, those days are gone, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Good question, Carl, but I think it's difficult. I understand it because the lack of a number 10, but I just don't think it's formation that modern teams play really anymore, to be honest. But and Camahello, good man, Camahello. Hello. I think, I can't remember where he said he was located. I think he was in South Africa. Yeah, he is in South Africa. He's asking why, 2 games in, I feel like our manager was scared to go for it. He said, why is Laka not starting? We've discussed that. He was the most informed striker before the huge miss. Yeah, I agree. I think it's knowing your players a little bit, and Arteta knows him better than we do, so I'm not going to judge him. But we know from watching Lacazette, he's a massive confidence player, but he's also a massive match fitness player. And you know, you get him as many minutes as you can, and if you're playing him into form, I personally think you just keep playing the guy. Because it takes a while to get him fit and get him in form. And when he is in form, we all know how unbelievable he actually can be. And I think sometimes people forget that. But now, after 2 games out, I'm thinking maybe we should start him in midweek. And I don't really want to be thinking that kind of thing, to be honest. But yeah, but good question, Camahello. So let's talk about midweek. We play Austrian team Rapid Vienna or Wien, and I don't know a lot about them, so I'm not glad I do. But I'm just wondering what, obviously Premier League squad comes out tomorrow. Do we expect the Premier League squad, Neil, to mimic the Europa League squad, or do you expect the omission to be different than Socrates and Ozil? Any thoughts on that, Neil? Without going into detail on
that. Let me not talk about those players.
I know.
Please.
I know. I mean, if it is, though.
Please.
I mean, I'm just wondering if your suggestion of do we get Saliba in the Premier League squad, I'm trying to do the numbers, but who do we remove? How does that work different? Or did Mike say it does work different because he's under a certain age group? I can't remember.
I thought because
on homegrown.
Was it you, Michael, that said something? He's been, because he's been officially our player for a year, that it doesn't.
I believe so. I mean, no one came out and said we were wrong. Like, you know, obviously you listened to it, but I believe because we signed him and then we put him back sent him back out to Saint Etienne, and obviously he's been registered again this season. If you've been registered, over like a 2-year period, he falls as he becomes a homegrown player, even though he's from overseas. So in that regard, I think we haven't got to worry about getting him in. He can play games. He could class him as a. You can always get players from under 23s, so because he's under that age, we can just pull him out. So if there was an issue with, we have a crisis in defence again, and we can always pull him out and play him, even if we haven't registered him in the actual squad. So we don't need to do that. It's like what Jack said, is it going to be Ozil again? Or Socrates or something else. But then if it is, it just makes it a bit confusing, right? Because when it goes to Europa League preparation, and then you go to preparation, and then there's certain things you game plan that you might have for, which is going to stretch across the next two games, and then you can't do that because this guy isn't for you. So I think it's likely to be the same, Jack. Answering Neil's question.
No, go ahead.
No issues with that, Mike, really? Or
not necessarily, because we're doing okay defensively. But it's just the other end, isn't it? And obviously everyone will keep, bringing that one out if the situation stays the same, up until let's say January, because they say you look at the league table after 10 games. So let's look at it after 10 games, 5 games in, and see where we are 10 games. And if we're still having this conversation, and he's not in it, and he's not in that squad, then, I don't think we will be. I don't think we will be, because a party will make that much of an impact on the way, on the formation as well. I think he will change the formation once he settles. I would just keep it, those two out, because why change it? Because then people will say, why have you put him in this squad and kept him out of that squad, and don't you want to win this, or, are you taking it seriously? So, if you just keep it the same, it just says, okay, that's it. He's drawn a line under it, and that's it. That's done. There's no more conversations after that.
Yeah, he stops that, doesn't he? Pretty much.
There's only one player that intrigues me, is Emil Smith Rowe, and I don't know what the situation is with him.
Well, he's not fit. He's homegrown, so yeah.
Is he fit?
I think we're expecting him to be in the squad for Thursday, to be honest, Neil. He's fit. I don't think he'll start Thursday because of his injuries, etc. I hope he does. I really hope he does.
He played at the weekend, didn't he?
He played in the under-23s, didn't he?
Yeah.
In the 3-3 against Man U. I don't know, surely he's got to make the subs bench.
I'd like him to start,
but because he has so many injuries, I wonder if he'll just be reluctant and we'll throw maybe Willock there or something like that. Do you think any first-team players start in midweek? I'm rooting for Partey and Laka, not because I want them to start in midweek games, but because I think they both could do with minutes with the team and whatnot. Is there anyone that you think, boys?
Who will play? I think he'll play Cedric. I think he'll give him a shot on Thursday. I wonder if he'll play the new goalkeeper. It's interesting. I agree to the fact that he didn't play Leno last time when we thought Leno may be rested, and I'm glad he wasn't in the League Cup game. But I'm wondering whether this time he may rest him. I'm not sure.
I think he might go stronger than I'm talking. I think you might see Luis,
I think we'll see Luis.
The intention was to play Luis anyway. That's why he was dropped for this game, I think. So we're going to play Luis in the midweek game. But
I can even see Niles probably will feature, won't he?
Niles, Cedric, Niles will feature.
Will start. I know you'll see Laka, but I think Nketiah will start.
You're probably right.
This worry about Pepe, as much as it is, I think him and Laka are very similar. They're both confidence players. They're both players that need to be on the ball. And I don't know whether it's worth playing him or whether he might go for Nelson. I don't know. It's interesting, actually. I'm looking forward to this lineup.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting game. Mm. I wouldn't be surprised to see Leno either. I'd love to see Smith Rowe. I think Partey will probably start. Should we just... let's get your predictions anyway. I mean, we don't know a lot about Rapid Vienna, but we need to go there and win. Don't we? We need to go there with a positive start. Away from home in Europe's never easy, even in the Europa League we've seen. So, Neil, what's your prediction for the score? Probably mixed learning, but...
I'll be a bit more conservative because it is a bit of an unknown. I think I'm just going to go for 2-1. Box standard 2-1. And, who could I say would score? I keep saying Pepe. I'm going to say Pepe. I want him to score. I think he needs to play, and I want him to score. So I'm going to say Pepe 2-1.
All right, Mike. What about you?
2-0, and I think he might play Nketiah. So I think I'll go with him to score.
Yeah.
I think if he doesn't play, if he plays Eddie Thursday, I don't think he'll play him Sunday. I think he'll play Laka. But if he plays Laka Thursday, then he might play the other way around. Just because of legs and turnarounds.
I think after that attacking performance, I think Laka has to come back in Sunday. So I'm hoping
I would say Laka more, yeah. But we'll see.
I'll go, I'll be positive. I'll go 3-1 and I'll go 3-1. I'll go Nelson. I think Nelson's going to start left wing because he did well against Leicester, didn't he, left wing. Yeah. Should we talk, just before you go, about the Van Dijk? He's out for the season. Well, he's out probably for the season. Well, you never know with Liverpool. Might be back in 3 months. But there's been a huge media uproar over this incident. And, Liverpool fans have kind of started it. Liverpool Football Club have asked for an investigation into VAR and the Premier League when they were benefiting from it for the last 12 months. I just find it really interesting timing. I mean, it's not a nice challenge. It's not a nice challenge. It's not a good tackle. It's after the ball. It's laying high. No. That's not the point, though. The point is that we know if anyone sort of suffered the brunt of British football, especially in the last 20 years, we know that the amount of players we have lost to dodgy tackles after the ball late that could all be considered, with more intent than Jordan Pickford's one. A lot of them could. You talk about, Debuchy's from Arnautovic and, Diaby tackle at Sunderland and Ramsey's from Shawcross and Taylor's against Eduardo. And you can list them nonstop. And Wilshere got rammed down two or three times. Kept going on about Marcus Babbel against Henry in the year 2000. I can't find it. It was an absolutely unbelievable tackle. I don't know how he didn't get sent off for it. He's mid-waist high. He kicks him in the waist. It's unbelievable. But I'm just, that was for Liverpool. But I think it's the timing of it, Neil, isn't it? It's the media sort of hypocrisy, which is outrage, the selective outrage, let's call it that concerns us, Neil, with this, isn't it?
Absolutely. I was fuming. You guys put something on WhatsApp earlier. I didn't know anything about it, and then I just thought, what's going on here? And I looked at back at the that some people had tweeted about the two incidents, the one on Eduardo and what was the other one, and the one on Van Dijk, and the pundits' reactions were so contrasting. I got that wrong. The one on Van Dijk was Bosnich, wasn't it? talking about how something should be done about this. And then I saw another one about how Hansen had spoken about Eduardo's tackle, saying, he's just done for pace. Not talking about the severity of it, not talking about how bad that tackle was. Oh, he's outdone with pace. And that was it. Nothing else he said. And I'm just livid. I sometimes used to feel that some of our fans that are taking this to a level where there is an absolute bias against us. And I think, no, come on. You're looking into things too much. All this conspiracy theory, I don't buy it. We get our share of bad luck, but we also get our share of good luck. I've always said that on the pods. You must have heard me that I think it's shared. What goes around comes around. Eventually we'll get our good luck. Then we'll get our bad luck. It's the way football is. But the last few months, I'm starting to see it with a different light. And I seriously I'm starting to believe that there is such a bias against us. I don't know where it's come from. It might be because Wenger brought a style of football that everyone was jealous of. He was a foreign manager that came here. He absolutely tore the league apart. And he took that throne away from Ferguson like no one else had ever done before. And he brandished this brand new style of football that no one else had ever thought of before. And it not just changed football in England. I think it changed football across Europe, if not the world. And I think maybe there was a certain jealousy there that, wow, look at this. This guy's from absolute mediocrity. Maybe I can't say that word, but he's come from nowhere. And look what he's achieved as a foreign coach. And I could be wrong, but I just feel that there's this been overhanging bias against us. When I look back at highlights with Match of the Day and with Sky, and if there's a controversial decision, it's almost like just brushed over when it's Arsenal. But when it's another team, especially if it's your darlings like Liverpool, Man United, Tottenham, oh my God, such a big thing's made of it. And it's almost as if, oh, now let's all act. Let's all just get, you know, jump around, because this happened to Van Dijk. And don't get me wrong, I do not wish that kind of tackle on any player, even that team down the lane. Sorry, Michael, that team down the lane, even their players. I do not wish it on anyone, because that's disgusting, right? And if fans love that sort of thing, we're no better than the Stoke fans that used to taunt, you know, have a song for Ramsey, for God's sake. That's disgusting. However, I don't like the reaction where Eduardo, Ramsey, Diaby, all those three players, at least the minimum, there should have been something done, a law change or something, and should have been stiffer sentences rather than, oh, he got a 3-match ban and that's it. That's a career-threatening injury. And not only will it affect your career, it could potentially affect the rest of your life as well. Because footballers' shelf lives, I know they earn a lot of money, but their shelf lives are small. If they don't have anything else to go to afterwards, that could potentially affect your whole life. So something harsher needs to be done. But as soon as it happens to Van Dijk or a Liverpool player, oh, let's all get on it. Let's all do something about it. And that's, for me, I don't like the bias. And I don't like the inconsistency. And I don't like the hypocrisy. That's it.
Mike, what about you?
I echo 100% what Neil says. You know, I mean, he's been talking about, you know, quite rightly, situations that we've had to deal with, obviously, going back a few years. You know, I remember working at Arsenal and Aston Villa, I played against Aston Villa, and it was just after Eduardo's injury, and they started singing a song about Eduardo breaking his leg. And it got to the point that that's like you were saying, Stoke fans were singing something about Ramsey, and Villa, who got nothing to do with the whole situation. It just, that's why when they were singing it, everyone was just taken aback and said, I'll never forget that moment when and then people just wanted to get out from their seats and go round to that away section and just tear the place apart, because it was like, who the hell are you to, one, sing a song like that and disrespect a player like that, who's his legs in bits, and then like Neil said, his career could be over. And, you know, he wasn't the same player after that. Diaby wasn't the same player after that, was he? You know, it's so sad. But we're going back all those years. But we, you know, even recently, since the restart, you know, the tackle from Tierney on who was it? Saka, when he the shin breaker, that wasn't looked at. But Eddie's one against the Leicester player was seen about 100 million times to say, oh, look how bad that was. Oh, do you know what I mean? Cresswell won Pepe, you know, when he took him out of the game, you know. But we're just told that, oh, you know, this is Arsenal. You've got to make yourself known that you're there. You just got to get on with it. You know, they don't like it up and all that stuff. So this is stuff that's happened recently, and we're being told that, oh, just, you know, it's typical Arsenal. You know, Gary Lineker even took the piss out of Wenger about it when we went to play Stoke one game, you know, on his closing thing. He literally took the piss out of England, you know, in front of... So it just shows you what we've had to deal with. And all of a sudden, they're talking about banning Pickford for as long as Van Dijk is out. When Wenger said that about the guy that took out Eduardo, people say, "Oh, what a ridiculous thing to say!" But oh, you know, since we've been on doing the pod, I've had Sky Sports News on. And I swear to you, they've shown Van Dijk's the incident 30 times. I'm telling you, 30 times they've shown it, different replays, different angles. So there's an agenda push there being done by, obviously, because they're the golden boys at the moment, and it's almost like to United days. If anything happens to United, then it's got to be amplified. But you know, it's going to be, you know, again, we don't wish harm on any player or to anything like that. We just want people to be treated properly and fairly, and you know, again, not to be, you know, they're this bias there, and it's because Arsenal, again, what Neil said, the reason we're treated like we are is because, you know, a Frenchman came over to England and told them how to do things better. And that's part of the reason. And the fact that we don't leak out as much information to the media like other clubs want to do to hire their standing, for example, inviting people in to do documentaries on them just to hire their profile. We don't need to do all that. We're Arsenal. We don't need to do all that. We keep things in-house. So the media hate us on that regard as well, because we don't open our doors and do all that stuff. So we're always going to be hated because we're a class above, and that's it. But all we can do is just... when we see things like this happen, or hypocrisy, we've got to make sure we highlight it and retweet whoever it is we need to retweet or tag people in that we need to tag, and maybe that the power and the support might change it. Who knows? You know, maybe
we're brandish as soft players as well. Is Van Dijk soft then? Is Van Dijk soft? Yeah. Because I didn't hear anyone say that about him.
And unfortunately, the injury shouldn't create the outrage. It should be the intent of the player that makes the foul. Sometimes you get away with it. What about Van Nistelrooy down Ashley Cole's shin? Leg break, tackle, gets away with it. So nothing said about it. Rooney diving two-footed into, I don't know, I think it might have been Gerrard, right into his thigh, right? Gets away with it. Ben Thatcher on Mendes, Roy Keane on Alvinga Haaland, right? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It happened. I'm not saying we're the only club that suffers from it. The issue is that the feeling is that we've always been this club that's, especially under Wenger, because we were the most footballing team in a time that there wasn't really footballing teams around in the Premier League, right? We were the ones that were always seen as the purists of football. And there was never outrage. Now we're playing a little bit negative. There's outrage at negative football. Absolute outrage at it. And I'm like, well, where was this when Liverpool hoofed the ball for 20 years, for example? None of that existed. So it's the agenda when it switches to the other side.
Do you remember the amount of grief we got when we had a player sent off under Wenger? Oh, it's the 50th person sent off by Wenger. And it was like a tally. And they were so quick to say it as soon as someone got sent off. But I think what really pissed people off is that we used to win those games anyway. We used to turn people over with 10 men anyway. But
you played better with 10 men, Michael.
Yeah. But it was like every time he got a red card, it was straight away, okay, right, that's number, you know, and let's keep saying it just so we can bash the club again.
Yeah. And a lot of those red cards... Go on, Neil.
Sorry, Jack. No, I was saying Sky Sports used to have a graphic of the tally as well. They'd have a graphic of all the red cards that Wenger had, all the players that he sent off as well.
And a lot of that's a foreign to English thing, I think, because we were, you know, first 4 and 11 and all that sort of stuff, and we got a hard run of it because of that. Not good to see that at all. But I just think, tremendous hypocrisy and the timing and the selective sort of criticism to certain clubs or favouritism to certain clubs when this kind of thing happens. Obviously, wish Van Dijk well. It's never a nice injury to come back from. It's strange, though. You know, Liverpool saying they've got the best coach since sliced bread, but yet one injury they're in absolutely outmore. I'm like, if you've got the best coach since sliced bread, they'll be fine, right? Don't worry about it. No problem. You should walk the league anyway because, that's what you've got the best coach since sliced bread. So no problem. But it's very, very odd. When I came out and this injury happened, they said, Pickford should be... we had 3 ACL tears last season. No one talks about them, though, so... There you go, Bellerin, Chambers and Holding. Well, they're not starters. They're all starters, actually, at the time. That's why they got ACL tear. So it's just, again, it's the selectiveness of it and people thinking they're the only ones to suffer this kind of thing. Again, bad challenge, don't like the challenge, don't like the injury at all, but the media hypocrisy is just unbelievable. So
I forgot. Remember Mustafi getting kicked, almost getting his eye taken out by Vardy as well? He didn't mean it, did he? He's not that type of player, you know, all that stuff come out.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of our red cards were from retaliation, from being kicked to high heaven. The Vieira one on Van Nistelrooy in a battle of Old Trafford, for example, doesn't touch him. It's from Van Nistelrooy constantly laying knees into his back. So it's just a lot of it's reactions to things, right? Reactions to not getting free kicks given. Same with the diving, you know, the Pires dives all the time, but you'll never ever see the Rooney dive that cost us our unbeaten run. You'll never see it. You can't find a replay of it. They won't show it. They'll never show it on Sky. So it's just very, very, sort of British media. Liverpool have always been thought of this. Sky Sports is basically, you know, Liverpool TV, isn't it, really? that's basically what it is. So it's kind of shocking. But boys, it's been good. Neil, and I've overran. Neil, you got to go. We'll be back after Thursday. Hopefully one or two of you. Hopefully with a win and build up to Leicester. Up the Arsenal, boys. Let's go. Come on.